Good afternoon. This is Rabbi Tokayer, Brooklyn, New York, for our weekly Pirkei Avos Pick Me Up. today I would like to discuss a very famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Yehoshua ben Prachia, Mishnah Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav and Zion. Yehoshua ben Prachia and Nitai Har Bailey. The two of them together produce a companion teaching. And it's a companion teaching, as the Mishnah says, I believe, as a companion teaching, as the Mishnah says, Yehoshua ben Prachia v'Nitai ha'arbeli kiblu mehem. Yehoshua ben Prachia and Nitai ha'arbeli received a tradition. So in other words, the two of them received a tradition, but then Pirkei Avos breaks it up into two. Mishnah Vav and Mishnah Zayin, Yehoshua ben Prachia, his teaching, Nitar Bailey, his teaching. But apparently they're connected at the hip because, as I pointed out, the introduction here is that they both received an oral tradition, Kiblu Mehem, right? So they both received Kiblu Mehem. They both, if these were two independent traditions, two independent Musar Haskels, then one could say that the Mishnah should have said Yehoshua ben Prachia Kibel and Nitar Bailey, or Yehoshua ben Prachia, you know, Haya Omer, Nitar Bailey Haya Omer. But apparently these are connected. So the question is, what is the teaching? We'll see in a second, and what is the connection here? Yehoshua ben Prachia Omer, Aseh lecha rav uknei lecha chaver v'hevedanis kol ha'adam lechav zchus. You have to make for yourself a rav, a rebbe, a teacher, acquire for yourself a friend, and danis kol ha'adam lechav zchus, judge everyone favorably. Nitei ha'arbeli, separate Mishnah, Mishnah Zayin, Nitei ha'arbeli says, Harchek mishachin ra, v'al tischaber l'arasha, v'al tisyash min ha'peranios. A person should stay a distance from an evil person, a neighbor, a wicked neighbor, should not keep company with such individuals. And lastly, even if individuals who are doing ill in the world seem to be benefiting, a person shouldn't despair that there is yesh din v'yesh dayan, there is judgment and ultimate justice in the world. There is so much to discuss in each phrase of these two Mishnayos, but I want to focus in on one particular phrase, and that's Havedanis kol ha'adam l'chav zchus, especially as our time is generally limited here today. Due to my lateness, it is even more limited. So I want to focus in on one piece here, and that is Havedanis kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. We should judge everyone favorably. Now, from one perspective, these two Mishnayos seem to be opposites of one another. Danas kol adam l'chav zchus means to judge everyone favorably, right? So if I see somebody doing something wrong, I need to assume that that he's really acting properly. If that's the case, how do we understand Nitei ha'arbeli, who says harchek mishachein ra? What do you mean a shachein ra? If I see somebody who's engaged in bad behavior, I have to judge them favorably. So how do these two Mishnayos, how do these two teachings go hand in hand? So perhaps one could say that Havedanis kol adam l'chav zchus is when I'm not sure about the other person. Nitei ha'arbeli, who says to distance myself from the other person, well, that's when I know for sure the other person is engaged in bad behavior. So there's only danis kol adam l'chav zchus. I only judge somebody favorably when I'm unsure what they're doing. But if I'm sure what they're doing, then I should distance myself from them. Right? That's one way to resolve an apparent inconsistency here. Another way to look at it is to say that both exist parallel to one another. I know who you are. Or I know who the individual is. I know they're a shachin ra. I know they're a rush. I know they do bad things. I know they're insensitive. They're unkind. They're incompassionate. They're rude. They're arrogant. Alamilas. They have all the things all the behaviors to stay away from. Having said that, with all of that, havedanis kol adam l'chav zchus. Still have to judge them favorably. And now, is that possible? What does that mean? To judge them favorably, even though I know the person is a crumb, bad, dishonest, how does that coexist? And yet, And yet, they seem to coexist. If this is an appropriate interpretation, then one has to ask the question, how can they coexist? So I want to share with you a few different approaches to Dan Kol Adam L'Chav Zchus, and in that light, perhaps we will address this essential question of how to understand not only what Dan L'Chav Zchus means and its essential critical principle for a Torah Jew, but also to understand how these two Mishnayos should be understood in tandem with one another. Okay, so let's take the first approach. Dan kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. So this, the Kazhin Tzemagid, has a beautiful thought here. And he says, on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Aseres Yimei Tshuva, so we have to engage in tshuva, right? We know that, so we have to engage in tshuva. Now, a person who's a tzaddik, their din, their judgment day is Rosh Hashanah, and the judgment is declared and done on Rosh Hashanah. A person who is a Rasha, so their din is, for all intents and purposes, declared on Rosh Hashanah. But for the Beinoni, for the individual who is, in the middle, a person who is 50-50, not 60-40 tzaddik or 60-40 Rasha, but they're 50-50. So here we have Aseres Yimei Tshuva and Yom Kippur to be able for the person to do another Maisa Mitzvah that will tip the scales. And this is true, says the Rambam, when it comes to judging an individual. And this is true as when it comes, to a community. So the Kazhin Tzemagid says the following. It's a beautiful, I don't know if it's pshat in the Mishnah, but it's certainly a beautiful idea. It says, Havidan kol ha'adam l'chav zchus doesn't mean you should judge the person, judge all people, favorably. But you should be the reason that kol ha'adam, all humanity, is judged favorably. Because just like Aseres Yimei Tshuva, we should look at ourselves as Beinonim, and my next action is the action that could tip the scales for me, Litov or Lara. Similarly, I should look at my own actions in light of my being a representative of my community, of my Kehila, of Kol HaAdam. And we should see the world as Omed Vitoli. That is 50-50, and this next maisa, this next action that I'm going to take, could tip the scales for kol ha'adam, for all of humanity. And that is perhaps daunting from one perspective, but it's also extraordinarily empowering. It means I have within myself the power to create, the power to sustain, the power to impact the world. Havedan is called, you have the power, be the one to do the action that's going to tip the scale. So says the Kazhin Tzemagid. Beautiful, beautiful idea. There's another way to look at this, and that is, let's understand just simple English translation. Havedan as kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. So you should judge kol ha'adam. So what does kol ha'adam mean? So kol ha'adam, I think if you look in most English translations or most people, if you ask somebody who knows the Mishnah, they'll tell you it means you have to look at all people and judge them favorably. But that's not really what kol ha'adam means. That's kol adam. You should judge every person or all people, l'chav zchus, favorably. But kol ha'adam means something entirely different. If I say, all the houses, that's, kol bayit. If I want to say the entire house, it's kol habayit. If I want to say all people, it's kol adam. But if I want to say the entire person, it's kol ha'adam. And this says the Sfas Emes, I'm paraphrasing here, the Sfas Emes says this is the meaning of Havidan is kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. You have to judge the entire person. And when you look at the entire person, every person has context. Every person has a full life. There's nobody who is all bad. And so therefore, if I look at a person who is, you know, their actions are unclear to me, I have two ways that I could possibly interpret it. So I should interpret it favorably. Because look at the person in their entirety. What's the likelihood? You know, most people are generally decent, good, honest, decent people. Most people. We're all people that have, you know, flaws and failures. So if I have two ways to look at something, and I look at the person in their entire context, that should give me the strength and the ability to overcome my impulse of judgmentalism and to judge the person and look at what they're doing negatively. But even more powerfully, let's say I know precisely what the person is doing. The person spoke not nicely to me. They cut me off in the store. They didn't invite me to the chasana when everybody else was invited. Whatever it is, I know what the person did. There is no equivocation. There's no unclarity about what the person did. Nevertheless, done as kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. Look at the person in their entirety. So the person didn't talk nicely to me. Should I judge the person on that moment and define them for that moment, their entire life? So now it's over. The person is now, you know, X'd out in my book. Would I want people to judge me that way? Maybe I was having a bad day. You know, I was short. I was curt with my spouse, with my child, with my friend, with my neighbor, with my colleague. So I would feel it's fair for people to judge me on that one slice of time, that one moment in my entire life experience? No. Have they done as kol ha'adam? Look at the person in their entire context. Number one, entire context meaning, you know, maybe the person had a bad day. Maybe I'm not seeing everything that's going on. But their entire context also means, look at the person in the context of their entire life. And I'm going to judge the person based on this one, instant? No. Have I done as kol ha'adam? Look at the person in their entire context. And if we do that, we will most likely have a much greater motivation to judge the person favorably. Okay. So that's another way of looking at this. And when we look at it this way, you know, we're not denying what the person is doing, even if we know what the person is doing. And we know that the person is doing something wrong. Now, it doesn't mean I should hang out with people who engage in this kind of behavior, even if they're basically decent. So I don't want to judge them, but it doesn't mean that this should be the company that I keep, because they're behavior can have an influence and an impact on me. Rashi says that, before I get to Rashi, I think there's another beautiful way to look at this. You know, several years ago, I don't know how many years ago, but several years ago, there was a study that was done, if I'm not mistaken, in the Chicago public school system. I'm sure you've all heard of it, if not directly, indirectly. And that is that the teachers were told that certain students in each class were gifted students. And this wasn't necessarily true. They just randomly picked kids and told us that the teachers that the kids were gifted. They didn't even tell the kids that they told the teachers. And what they found a year later after, I guess, whatever standardized tests they took, that the students whose teachers thought they were gifted performed ultimately better in a whole series of tests. So what do you see from this? The theory is that when you set expectations, people meet those expectations. So here's pshat in dan es kol ha'adam l'chav zchus. You have to judge everyone favorably. Why? Because even if I know the person has all these flaws and failings, but if I judge them favorably, certainly if the person is doing something which is open to interpretation, if I judge them favorably, they will rise to my expectations. And if you judge me favorably, I will rise to your expectations. Have a done as kol ha'adam l'chav zchus means judge each person favorably, such that all people will be l'chav z'chus. Dan es kol ha'adam l'chav z'chus, judge each person favorably, so that way kol ha'adam, all people, will be now l'chav z'chus. Because when we all meet each other's better expectations from one another, then we create a community, a families, community, society, in which it is a chav z'chus. Okay, now to Rashi. Rashi says that it is important to judge somebody favorably, even if I know how precisely what their failings are, for very self-centered reasons, selfish reasons. Right? It accrues to my benefit. How so? Says Rashi. Because I know that this person maybe is not so always the most honest person. I know this person sometimes talks foul. I know sometimes this person engages in lashon hara and is sometimes insensitive and all things. Nevertheless, I am going to judge the person favorably, i.e., I will not condemn the person for their failings. I will rather look at them for whatever good they might have in them, because if I do that with other people, if I don't cancel other people based on their unfavorable behaviors, and rather I judge them favorably, then I can look at the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will hopefully look at me on the Yom HaDin and say, just as you judged favorably someone else who really deserved to be judged lignai, to be judged lechova, unfavorably, I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, am now going to give you the same treatment that you gave other people. You were broad and had flexibility and were able to accept other people with all their mishagas and with all their failings, even if it impacted on you. I, Hashem, even though you don't deserve it, but just like your chaver didn't deserve it, and you gave it to them, you don't deserve it, and I, the Ribbono Shel Olam, will judge you favorably. So Dan L'chav Z'chus, says Rashi, is not about wearing rose-colored glasses or interpreting something that is ambiguous in one way or another, or even setting aside a person's failing. No, it has nothing to do with that. I will judge you favorably even though you don't deserve it one whit. And in doing so, I accrue benefit to myself. And in a certain way, if you think about it, in this lo lishma kind of motivation, if everybody does that with one another, I'll judge you favorably, so that way I get a good judgment on Yom HaDin. You judge me favorably. Unwittingly, in this lo lishma motivation, we create a beautiful society of people that are just accepting of one another. Doesn't mean that I accept the behavior. Doesn't mean that I have to be that I have to hang out in such inappropriate or objectionable circumstance. But I'm not going to write you off. And this then gets us to the Rambam. The Rambam is not quite as the Rambam limits this notion of Avedanis Kol Adam L'Chav Z'chus, and I would say most Rishonim, or many Rishonim, take this approach as well. Avedanis Kol Adam L'Chav Z'chus isn't the big Midas Chasidus that we might have thought. Says the Rambam, Rabbeinu Yonah, and others, if a person is Muchzak Rasha, this person cheats, and he lies, and he steals, and he talks Lashon Hara, and everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. This is, there's no question who we're talking about here. Somebody like this, says the Rambam, if he does something which might look like it's good, you don't even have to assume that it's good, because somebody who is muchzak rasha, somebody who is an established thief or an established lowlife, so it could be that you're being taken for a ride over here. You think he's putting money in the tzedakah box? Count the money in the tzedakah box after he put his hand in. In other words, a Rasha cannot be trusted. So there's no Dan L'chav Z'chus really when it comes to a Rasha, in the view of the Rambam and others. And when it comes to somebody who is established as an upstanding tzaddik, somebody who's well known and for his good behavior or her good behavior, there's also in such a situation, it's not dan l'chavskus. It is prohibited for you to judge the person otherwise. The Gemara says, if you're choshed b'ksheirim. Choshed b'ksheirim is not the flip side of dan l'chavskus. To suspect somebody who is beyond reproach is not simply another way of saying judge people favorably. No, if I suspect somebody of doing ill who is beyond reproach, I am engaged in an avera. So the Rambam says, let's take the extremes off off the edges here. Somebody who is an established low life, there's no dalachav schus for that guy. Somebody who is an established, honorable person, for that person, if I see what they're doing and I interpret it lechova, even if it doesn't seem to be open to interpretation, right? It's not ambiguous, but it looks wrong. If there's even the smallest possibility that what the person is doing can be interpreted positively, then since the person is an established person of honor, I have to assume that they're doing the right thing. And it's not because it's dan l'chav schus, not because I'm judging them favorably. The absence of my judging them favorably, in this case, I'm violating the choshed b'ksheirim. And the Gemara has not particularly kind things to say about the consequences for somebody who's choshed b'ksheirim, somebody who suspects somebody else who seems to be above reproach. Okay, so if that's the case, the Rambam has a very, very limited view of dan l'chav schus. Who's dan l'chav schus? Somebody who themselves is sort of middle of the road, and what they're doing is ambiguous. And somebody like this, not an established Russian, not an established tzaddik, a benoni, middle of the road person, doing something which is ambiguous, can be interpreted in two ways. That's when we say a person should be dan l'chav schus. Okay. But I would like to bring us now to one, possibly two stories that, depending on our time here, that I think will provide us with a very powerful and deep and meaningful approach to this Mishnah, the Mishnah of Yehoshua ben Prachya and Nitei Ha'ar Beili. So if we want to understand judging somebody favorably on the one hand versus distancing ourselves from bad company on the other, we have to look at the author of this Mishnah, Yehoshua ben Prachya. So who's Yehoshua ben Prachya? Yehoshua ben Prachya, it's not so much who he is, but a very, very important story regarding Rabbi Yehoshua ben Prachya. And it's a story which perhaps we're familiar with, maybe we're less familiar with, but it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that was excised from from the Talmud sometime in the Middle Ages, when Jews were concerned about being persecuted by their Christian neighbors. And the story goes as follows. In recent years, some of these excised Gemaras, or censored Gemaras, have been reprinted back in the current printings of the Talmud. So this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It tells us the following story. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, a person should always drive a sinner away with their right hand, with their left hand, the Amin Mikarebes, and draw them in with their right hand. In other words, when dealing with people that are unsavory or just sinners of whatever type, we should distance ourselves. We should put some measure of space between ourselves and them due to their behavior. But on the other hand, we shouldn't entirely push them away. And the Gemara says, and this is the excised portion. Like whom? Who would be a good example of violating this principle of pushing somebody away, but not entirely removing them from your orbit? Who would be a good example of violating this? Says the Gemara, Lo Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, not like Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, Shedachvo liyeshu b'shtei yadayim. Not like Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, who pushed away Yeshu, right, with two hands. So what's the story about Yoshua ben Prachya and Yeshu? And just for clarity, we're talking about Yeshu. That's we're referring to Jesus, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro. The Gemara tells us not only the story of Yeshu and Yoshua ben Prachya, but also the story of Elisha and Gehazi. So it's two stories. I'm not sure we're going to have time for both, but we'll try at least one. Says the Gemara, it was during the time of Alexander Yanai, who went on a massive killing spree to kill many of the Chacham and the sages. And as this was going on, Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya decided it was time to pick up and leave. And so he and his student Yeshu went to Egypt, and they took refuge in Egypt. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, Maihu, ki dekatlinhu yanai malka l'rabbanan, ozal Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya v'yeshu l'Alexandra shel Mitzrayim. They took refuge in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. Ki havishlama, when peacetime arose, and it was safe to come back, shalach le'shimon ben Shetach, meaning Yerushalayim Yerakodesh, Shalichi Alexandria, Shal Mitzrayim Achosi. Bali Shari Besochech, Vanochi Yoshev Shomema. I'm not going to translate word for word, but the basic gist of this is Shimon ben Shetach sent a message. It's a beautiful metaphor here, basically saying, come back, it's safe. You're not going to be killed by Alexander Yanai and his henchmen. So what did Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya do? Come, Asa v'Yisramilei, Hahu Shbiza. So they went on their way, coming back to Eretz Yisrael. They stopped at a certain inn. Avdulei Yikratuva. They were greeted warmly in this inn. Omar, Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya commented, Yafa Achsanya Zo, how beautiful is this Achsanya. Now the word Achsanya can be understood in two ways. It can either mean an inn, or it can mean an innkeeper. In the days of old, the innkeepers were usually women. And so, Yeshu responds to Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, and he says to him, I don't really have the same view of the beauty of this woman as you do. Eina hatrutos, her eyes are narrow. Yeshua ben Prachya is shocked by Yeshu's comment. He wasn't talking about Achsanya, the woman. He was talking about Achsanya, the inn. What a beautiful inn this is. And Yeshu interpreted and understood it as he was talking about, how beautiful this particular woman is. Amarlei, so he says to him, Rasha, bekachata osek. This is, how you conduct yourself. This is what's going through your mind. Right? I say Achsanya, and you think the contours of a woman? So, apik arba mea shifore vishamte. So, Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya excommunicated Yeshu. Okay? The story continues. Also, lakame kamazimnin. Yeshu came back to Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya. Apparently, he wanted to do tshuva. So Asalei comes in, he came back once, twice, Amarlei Kablan. So he says to him, I want you to accept my tshuva. And one, two, three times, Rabbi Yoshua ben Prachya, in essence, just ignores him. Finally, Yom Achada, one day, have a kakaris kriyashma. Yeshu came. It was in the middle while Yoshua ben Prachya was reading Kriya Shema. And he comes to him and he says, he wants to do tshuva. And Rav Yoshua ben Prachya thinks to himself, I am going to let him back in. But he's in the middle of Kriya Shema, and Birchas Kriya Shema. So he takes his hand, he gives a hand gesture to Yeshu. Now, in that hand gesture, Rav Yoshua ben Prachya was signaling to him, hold on a second, I'll be with you in a moment. He was in the middle of Kriyashma. However, Yeshu understood that he was, with that hand gesture, that he was waving him away. And now, after multiple times of trying to do tshuva, he gave up. And not only did he give up, says the Gemara, Azal zakaf leventa v'hishtachav alah. He took a brick and he worshipped. In other words, he went to Avodah Zarah, to idol worship. So Yeshua ben Parachya sees what's going on, and he looks at Yeshu, and he says to him, "Do tshuva." And Yeshu says to him, "But you already taught us." Somebody who sins and causes others to do tshuva, to do an avera, has no place for tshuva. So, and the Gemara concludes, the Amar Mar Yeshu kishefe hisis b'hidiachas Yisrael. Yeshu went off, performed sorcery, incited other Jews to go down a path, and it led Israel astray. Now, regardless of the historicity of this story, whether this is Yeshu of Christianity or not, it is clear that Chazal assumed this, to be the case, and it is clear that over the millennia that this story, whether historically accurate to that particular moment in time, it is certainly understood in that context. You know, the Gemara itself is written 300 years after Yeshua ben Parachya and Itai Har Bailey, and it's written several hundred years after the advent of Yeshu and the beginnings of Christianity. So certainly it seems in the minds of Chazal, the story is attributed to him. Now, what does this have to do with our Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Havidanas Kol Adam L'Chav Zchus? Every actor in this story fails. And Yehoshua ben Parachya, who says you have to judge people favorably, perhaps he learned that from this Maisa. Yehoshua ben Parachya talks about an achsanya, how beautiful the achsanya is, and Yeshu misinterprets it. It's an ambiguous word. Two ways that he could have interpreted it. He could either have interpreted his Rebbe as talking about the shapeliness of a woman, or he could be talking about an inn. And Yeshu chose not to be dan l'chav zchus, but to be dan l'chav chova. And the truth of the matter is that Yehoshua ben Parachya, in his relationship with Yeshu, he totally excommunicates him. That's also not being dan l'chav zchus, as we understood it in one of our approaches. To be dan l'chav zchus is to look at the person in their entirety. And even if we see the person doing something wrong, we're not dochem. We don't cancel the person. We don't cancel the person and judge the person. Havidanus kol ha'adam. Look at the person in their entire context. Look at the person in their entire life. Even if the person has plenty of averas to their name, we don't cancel them. We don't get rid of them. And we're not the doch. And this is what Rabbi Yehoshua ben Parachya learns from this story. And then Yeshu again. When Yeshua ben Parachya gives him the hand signal, so there's two ways to interpret it. That hand signal could either mean, go away, I'm never going to speak to you again. Or that hand signal could mean, wait a minute. Right? So there's two ways to interpret it. Every member in that story interprets things l'chova. And there are tragic, tragic consequences that ripple across 2,000 years of Jewish history because of the inability or the failure to be dan l'chav zchus. And so therefore, Yehoshua ben Parachya establishes as a fundamental, critical principle of Torah Judaism to be dan l'chav zchus. Now, it comes along with Nitai Har Bailey, which means Harchek Mishachen Ra. You have to distance yourself from people that engage in bad behavior. So how you dan l'chav zchus and you distance yourself? And the answer is exactly what the Gemara says. You docha b'smol, makarev b'yamin. It means that even when somebody is legitimately guilty of unconscionable behavior and sinful behavior and terrible behavior, right, we don't push them away entirely. You have to be dan l'chav zchus. Look at the person in their entirety. You have to be dan l'chav zchus. See something in them which you can hold on to. You have to be dan l'chav zchus. Look at the context. Look at their context. You have to be dan lechav schus, because even if everything they did, or even if what you're seeing is wrong, you want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to judge you lechus. So just to judge him lechus also. Don't throw him away in their entirety. And how often do we see this? I just want to conclude. I'm going to skip the story here of Elisha and Gehazi, perhaps for another time. But along with this story of Elisha and Gehazi, Rav Dessler in his Michtav Me'Eliyahu develops a beautiful idea which is entirely relevant to this idea of being dan l'chav schus. It doesn't mean to look at life through rose-colored glasses, and you see people doing krumkeit and terrible things and say, oh, you know, they must be they must be visiting the sick and giving tzedakah, where you see them in 3D doing just the opposite and terrible things. But Rav Dessler says that when a person is on whatever level below tzaddik, a person has to understand that they can at least be a kli l'kedusha. A kli l'kedusha. Yeshu could have been a kli l'kedusha. Gehazi, we're not going to do the story, could have been a kli l'kedusha. You and I, or at least me, I'm not a tzaddik. If I can't be a tzaddik, at least I can be a kli l'kedusha. And the way we have to look at other people around us who are, we might judge to be on a lower level, a lower station of spirituality, of a profundity, of spiritual sensitivity than us, or what we think is appropriate, instead of writing them off, we have to look at them as kli l'kedusha, as a potential kli l'kedusha. Look at ourselves that way. If we're honest with ourselves, we understand that I'm not a tzaddik, but maybe I can at least be a kli l'kedusha. Those around me who I have the impulse to judge, they can also be a kli l'kedusha. 30 more seconds, it's 1:50, so 30 more seconds. I just want to share with you that Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked many years ago, it's published in Igros Moshe, somebody asked him about how to respond to the miracle, or what was called the miracle of the Israeli Defense Forces, the IAF, going in and freeing the Jewish captives in Entebbe. And Rav Moshe writes in his tshuva, he says, yeah, it's an ace. There's no question it's an ace. He said, how can it be an ace? How can it be an ace being done by people that are not religious Jews? The answer is, everybody can be a kli l'kedusha. Everybody has the capability. Our job is to look at ourselves that way and to inspire ourselves. If we can't be tzaddikim gemurim, at least be a kli l'kedusha, a vessel that can enable kedusha. And when we see those around us who are not as religious as us, not as spiritually sensitive as us, not living a profound divine life as we think, even people that consider themselves not religious and not observant, they can also be a kli l'kedusha. And I think that this is a worthwhile thing for us to think about as we contemplate Yehoshua ben Prachya's teaching, Havedan is Kol Adam Lechav Schus, especially in light of the 3 weeks, the 9 days, and Tisha B'Av, which is coming up. If we engage in this type of ethos, we are more likely to create a society of Avas Chinam and less likely to live with the consequences of Sinas Chinam. Have a good day. Good.